Delighted today because January is National Human Trafficking Prevention Month. And every year since 2010, presidents have dedicated this month to raise awareness about human trafficking and to educate the public about how to identify and prevent the crime. In 2000, Congress passed the Victims of Trafficking and Violence Prevention Act, aimed at combating human trafficking, especially involving the sex trade, slavery, and involuntary servitude. 10 years later, President Barack Obama proclaimed January as National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. I am delighted to welcome the sisters of the Waterbury chapter of the Lynx, along with Tamara Clark from Love 146, to have this very important discussion on human trafficking and what that looks like, so that we help raise awareness, dispel some of the myths, and to open our eyes and awareness of what is happening right here in our own backyard. So welcome, Nicole. I know you want to share a little bit about the Lynx and what y'all do and who y'all are.
Okay, I'll be very brief. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Nicole Nunez, and I'm a proud member of the Waterbury chapter of the Lynx Incorporated. Many watching may say, well, what is the Lynx? Well, I'm proud to give you a quick overview. On November 9th in 1946, two visionaries who later became our founders, Margaret Roselle Hawkins and Sarah Strickland Scott, founded the Lynx Incorporated. Today, our membership consists of 16,000 or more professional women of African-American descent. We have 292 chapters located in 41 states, including the District of Columbia, Commonwealth of Bahamas, and the United Kingdom. We are one of the nation's oldest and largest volunteer organization made up of extraordinary women committed to enriching, ensuring a culture of economic survival and of African Americans and other persons of African descent. Lynx hold true to our values of friendship, integrity, honesty, and service, to name a few. Lynx are distinguished women who are achievers, influential decision makers, business-minded, civic leaders, role models, mentors, activists, and volunteers. Lynx cultivate through our programming. Our programming consists of five facets: services to youth, the arts, national trends and services, international service trends and services, and health and human services. Today, along with BABS, we recognize our international trends and services, which focuses on our efforts to combat human trafficking. Today, the super amazing Waterbury chapter of the Lynx Incorporated are happy to partner with BABS to discuss what Homeland Security calls the modern day slavery, human trafficking. Thanks for having us, BABS.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My absolute pleasure. I'm a huge fan. Some of y'all sisters are my sisters. And
very true.
And so I commend y'all. Tamara Clark, I'm so happy to have you here, because I know the good work that Love 146 does. Tamara Clark is holds an MS, serves as a Connecticut Survivor Care Director for Love 146. She is responsible for overseeing all aspects related to service coordination and implementation within the Connecticut Survivor Care Program. She holds a bachelor's degree in human services and a master's degree in nonprofit management. She brings 15 years of experience providing direct service and managing family systems, such as early childhood education, home visiting, parenting education, care coordination, and homelessness systems, to this important work. She believes everyone has a life purpose and is passionate about helping others recognize their strength and work towards addressing barriers that hinder their purpose-filled lives. So for the folks out there who do not understand human trafficking and think that it's somehow that only happens in other parts of the world, we have a human trafficking issue in this country. We have a human trafficking problem in Connecticut. So jump in, any one of you all, to talk about why did the Lynx decide to take up the mantle of raising awareness around human trafficking? Because this is not an easy conversation to have in our communities at all. So talk to me, why did y'all pick this as something? And I know you're not, this is not the first time you had this conversation, because I was doing some homework and y'all have been trying to raise awareness around human trafficking for quite some time.
Well, one thing, for so long, it has been the quiet kept form of slavery. And 9 times out of 10, individuals who are trafficked look like you and I, or have some type of disparity. They're not Caucasian. And so as a Lynx member, we decided that this was something that we needed to combat, to join in with those small organizations that are trying to save our children, trying to save our males and females, and keep families together.
Thank you.
And so without the Lynx and without shows like your show, you don't hear about it unless you hear about it on the news. And you barely hear about it on the news unless it's a certain individual or a certain type of individual who has been kidnapped or who's been away from his or her family. You don't hear about it if it's someone who looks like you and I.
Yes. So, Tamara, give us the definition of human trafficking.
Okay. So human trafficking is any situation of exploitation that a person cannot or refuse to leave because of threats, violence, coercion, deception, and or abuse of power. And we work with youth, right? And so in the case of child sex trafficking, force, fraud, or coercion do not need to be present. And the crime is simply the exchange of any sex act with a child for anything of value.
Because children can't consent to sex.
They're right. They're under the age of minors. And I think that's hard because sometimes you'll hear people kind of blaming like a 14-year-old or a 13-year-old.
She looks 20. Mm-hmm. Or she's grown. She's fast.
She's fast. You know that. We hear that. She's fast.
It's grown men saying this and grown women saying this about children. Oh, mm-hmm. She's fast. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm. Blaming the victim. But I think that's the challenge, especially like what you guys are talking about in regards to what's happening in our community, right? Just having the understanding, one, that it's happening in our community, and two, thinking about how we are viewing them. Are we viewing them as children? It's not just our community, even the news, right? People will view them as adults. They look 20. Look at the body, you know, things like that. So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. So, in talking about human trafficking in our community, what are some of the things that we should notice or pay attention to? You're muted.
I'm sorry. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt. So I think there are a number of vulnerabilities, right? And red flags. And so some things that people can be thinking about are when youth come home and they have materials or things that you're not sure how do they pay for that? Where do they get that? They have romantic partners who are older. They're being more isolated. Things of that nature where you need to just really look at and kind of question who they're hanging out with and things like that. Let's see, running away. That's something to be looking at. Crossing state lines, being running away for a couple of days, posting explicit pictures online, unaccounted for injuries or tattoos. So those are some red flags, but traffickers also target like certain vulnerabilities as well.
Mm-hmm. So when the Waterbury Lynx decided to take this on as an issue in those early days, what did you learn and what was surprising to you about what human trafficking looked like in our communities?
Well, I think because in my professional career, I work with this all the time, and so this facet was just for me. I think just how children are groomed, how young women are groomed. You would say, an educated woman would say, well, how did he or she go for that? you have to look deeper into it. There's psychological issues. There's abandonment. There's a lot of things that traffickers all they need is one thing to pull on. And once they have you with that one, as Tamara said, vulnerability, they've got you. And so as a link, we looked at all of that and we learned all of that. We've had forums where we've brought in law enforcement, federal law enforcement, state law enforcement to talk to youth. And just to hear the response from children, young people, they're like, wow, because they've come across that or a friend has come across that. So just as links to put that information out there to say, hey, when you hear that or see that, think twice. It's not always what it looks like. So open your eyes.
So Tamara, this sounds like, how do parents have these conversations with kids? How do teachers have these conversations, or how do schools have these conversations about this uneasy subject matter? Because it sounds like, I've raised teenagers. Sounds like teenage angst. Sounds like, well, you know, they're moody. Oh, well, you know what? Maybe they're not. They don't make friends so easily. What are some of the things that fit parents and schools and ministers and all these folks should look for?
Well, I think first we have to start with one, acknowledging, right, that it's happening in our country, in our state, in our neighborhoods. That's the first part, right? We have to acknowledge that. And I think before they try to have the conversation, educating themselves, right, on the facts, the myths, right? Our website is great for that, obviously, right? I'm going to plug Love 146, but educating themselves on grooming, as Nicole said, educating themselves on what is child sex trafficking or even labor trafficking, right? Talking about consent, what is coercion, right? All of those things. So I think there's a number of things to educate themselves on first and then kind of spread the word. And yes, sitting down and talking with young people about internet safety. So I think making sure they have the right tools, right? To make sure they know how to have the conversations. Because I think if we just try to scare them, that might not happen because, right, they're teenagers and, right, you know, they may kind of poo-poo whatever you're saying. But something that we have that's really helpful, we have a caregiver guide on our website and parents and caregivers can download that. And it'll really kind of go through those areas and really help them to be able to start to have the conversation and give examples of actual situations and conversations that teenagers may have or younger than teens, right? Because it starts younger as well, that situations they may be in and kind of role play or say, well, what if this happens? This is how you can respond to really help them to do that versus stay off the internet. That may not work.
Yes, because that's the parents' first go-to, yeah. Right? I know I've said it, so I know. How do we empower parents to feel confident enough to sort of say, instead of saying, I know not my child, I would know. Or I would know if my child is being coerced or bullied or trafficked. I would know this because that's my child. How do we empower parents to sort of go at this a different way, to come at this a different way without feeling like we are usurping their ability to parent and not calling them out as being bad parents?
I could go first really quick. I think like forms like this one, Babs, forms in the schools, Q&A in the school, and having, if you're able to have a real live individual who was trafficked. I think I've been in forums where we've had that real life individual. It opens the eyes to the kids and the parents. And when they leave, it leaves that door open to further that conversation because the kids now see that this is real. This young lady, this young man went through this. They told their horrific story. And like I said before, I've seen some of those signs. So you see the signs and you see a real person expressing what they went through and how they fought and how they made it back. It opens that door to continue the conversation.
So Tamara, does it help when survivors of human trafficking speak to folks about their experiences, does that put a face to a problem so that it is no longer invisible?
I think it can. So I think it should be up to survivors, right? Because sometimes if you are asking them to speak, sometimes it can be, you know, more traumatizing, right? Or people kind of revisiting that. It should be up to the survivors. I think it can be helpful, but I think it can also be helpful. Some of the things we try to do and some ethical storytelling is we may not necessarily have the survivors speak, right? If that's not something they want to do, but we can kind of use their information and tell real life, right? We're not making up, you know, just outlandish stories that no one will believe, right? But that stories or share situations where it's actually relatable. So yes, survivors can do that, and that's great and that's helpful, but you can also do it in a way where you're using that information and their story in a way that keeps them anonymous, but it's still helping and someone can still relate to it and say, oh, that sounds like me. That's exactly how I got in touch with that person on that certain app or something like that. So it's definitely.
Do you find the communities, the communities that you go into, by communities, I mean school systems and police departments and all those other kind of things, are they open and receptive to helping raise awareness about human trafficking? I mean, are they inviting you into spaces to talk about this issue?
Oh yeah, we get invited into a lot of spaces. We don't always have capacity, right? We get, because it's becoming more known. So yes, people are reaching out. I think if they're not interested, they're not asking us to come in and speak about it. I do know there are some places that are not open to it or don't think it happens in their area. I think there's this myth that it only happens to those people in certain areas, and it's not happening in our area. So we really don't need anyone to come speak about it in our school system. And there's a fear, right? A legitimate fear that parents have or guardians have about, are we introducing something to younger kids when we shouldn't be? So there's a lot of dynamics which can impact if people are ready to kind of hear and receive the information in their community or acknowledge it may be something in their community already.
So talk to me about services and supports for folks who are survivors of human trafficking, for the survivor and for the significant others and loved ones and family members. What's in place to sort of help, I don't know, reunify families or strengthen families or walk families through what is happening to them? Is there ever opportunity for people to be brought to justice for trafficking folks? Talk a little bit about all those kinds of things.
So there's a number of different organizations out there in our nation, you know, in our state. And so I can't speak to all of those. And I think usually they have a certain niche, right, of what their area is. This one may be working with 13 to 17 year olds and they're just survivors. We work with survivors or we do prevention work. There may be an organization that works with women in their 20s and they provide housing. And that's a way to kind of get them employment and get them back. So there's lots of different types of organizations. There are, you know, there's the FBI and the police department who are working to bring some folks to justice. So definitely we work with the FBI and law enforcement on cases. And so there's definitely a fight to bring people to justice. As Nicole said, I don't hear a lot about it on the news, right? I'm not sure why that is. Occasionally, I see something pop up specifically in Connecticut about that. That doesn't mean it's not happening, but definitely there are services out there, lots of different types of services. I think the National Human Trafficking Hotline is a great, right? It's a national organization, a great place for people to look. Even in Connecticut, we partner with Department of Children and Families. They have a whole team called HEART. And so that's specifically working on human trafficking as well. So there is a lot, there is a number of organizations that are willing to help and are working on it. And like I said, they're usually, because there's even an organization called CERI. And so that's the Center for, I think they're working with immigrants and refugees, but they also are working on human trafficking and labor trafficking, right? So that's a specific niche as well. So there's a lot out there. People kind of Google it. Yeah.
I just want to impress upon people that even though we've seen in the news very high profile trafficking cases with Epstein and the woman who was who was just convicted and waiting sentencing. That's at the very high level. And I want to caution people to sort of not look at those cases as if that can't happen at our level, because it's happening. It's really more at this level than at that high million billionaire level, right? That's just entertainment on some level, but not to say that what has happened to those young women at the hands of Epstein and all those that partnered with him is for entertainment, but we have a real problem at this level, at the local ground level, and trying to raise awareness about that and connecting the dots so that people will understand that this is happening in our communities with folks who live next door to us or across the street from us or around the corner from us, that they're not just rich playboy type people who are throwing money around, that this is a real issue. Talk a little bit, talk a little bit about what the profile looks like, what you've seen the profile look like of folks who are doing this business of human trafficking.
I've seen the profile of a flashy, good-looking gentleman who has the nice car with the nice rims and is dressed nice. And he impresses himself upon a skinny, young, naive young lady who has very low self-esteem. And he approaches her and she just lights up like a Christmas tree. Who is this hunk? And he's after me. And all her friends are looking, or his friends are looking, and he starts to wine and dine her, you know, taking her out, and she starts to sneak around, and mom and dad don't know where she's going, and he may purchase her things. And once she's in his claws, it's hard to release her back to mom and dad, because he makes her feel secure.
Mm-hmm. 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 And not very different than a pimp.
Exactly.
Right. Not very different than a pimp that uses psychological tools and emotional tools to ensnare young folks. Do you ever see women trafficking children and people?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And their own children.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. I would say traffickers don't look like any one stereotype. Right. Definitely what you said, Nicole, those romantic partners. But we've connected in situations where the exploiters have been family members, peers, teenagers, right? Romantic partners, like you said, educators, employers, community leaders, clergy. And that's what makes it right. That's what we want people to understand. It isn't those people over there.
Right. Like, you're not going to see a flashy guy. I mean, it's not going to be obvious, right? Like,
no,
they really are not obvious.
Right. It's not obvious. It's hidden, and it's right in front of us. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so prevalent, and people not understanding what's happening, because it's just right in front of you.
Is there a hotline, or is there a number? Like, how do, if there's some folks who are listening, and I know there are, who can they call if they want more information, or if they suspect, maybe they suspect not in their house, but maybe next door, they suspect something is happening. What should they do?
If someone suspects human trafficking, and even if you want to be anonymous, right, you can call the DCF care line. Because again, I'm talking about young people, right? Make sure you say human trafficking, if that's what you're calling about, right? They have different lines. And just like you can call in if you suspect abuse or neglect and ask to be anonymous, you can do the same thing on the DCF care line. You can submit an anonymous tip to the National Human Trafficking Hotline. You can also call that same hotline. I can give out the number if you like.
Yes, please.
It's 888-373-7888. So if you suspect, again, the same thing, if you suspect abuse or neglect, you're not asked to investigate and prove it, right? You're calling it in, doing your part, because you have a suspicion, and then they can kind of take it from there.
And also in the inner cities, our local police departments have units specifically for human trafficking. So you can also reach out to your local police department, the non-emergency number, and just ask for anyone assigned to the human trafficking unit so that you would have someone local right in your community. And there, most of the inner city police departments have that task force, and they are usually joined by the FBI. One member is a part of the FBI. They're part of the other state federal agencies. So it's a combination of federal and state. So you can call the local police department.
I believe we have some legislation in Connecticut around human trafficking. Do you all follow that? Do you stay on top of that? I'm sure Love 146 does. I know that there a bill was introduced, I don't know, maybe a few years ago or a year ago around human trafficking. Do you all follow? I mean, do you think legislatively there can be some support or help to help eradicate this problem?
I do. I think definitely, and it usually takes time because it's the same thing. Education, right, where you're going in. And I think maybe was it 2 years ago, we had gone to the legislative office to speak about human trafficking and talk about that, even to talk about how race plays a part in that, and just to educate legislators so that, you know, they have that understanding and can support any bills that are coming out around that. And so it takes time, but it's definitely possible, right? Years ago, we weren't talking about human trafficking, right? And so progress has been made and it continue to be made. I think we have to attack this at all different fronts, right? Prevention, working with survivors, legally, right? All of the areas we have to kind of be involved with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about success stories that you've seen, because I mean, I want people to understand that their life does not end because this happens to them, that there is opportunity for them to rise above or create a better life for themselves after the fact. Do you know stories like that? Do you know people who have overcome and thrived past what has happened to them?
Is that just for me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. And I think we have seen young people go through their journey, and it's usually not a straight line, right? It's here, it's there, it's up, it's down, it's back, right? But definitely youth graduating high school, even though they were dealing, right, and working on their healing through this, getting into college and now having their own apartment, right? And so we've definitely seen progress. And sometimes we get folks who call us back when they're 25 and say, hey, I just graduated college. Do you want to come to my graduation? Right. You know, still working through what they need to work through in their healing. But there is support out there and helping folks to kind of, there are even therapists who are versed in human trafficking as well, who can help folks kind of work through that journey. So definitely it's possible, and we've seen it.
So we have a survivor with us, and I wanted to know if they feel comfortable talking about their experience, and if they could unmute themselves. I'd be happy to hear their story and talk a little bit about where they are in their lives. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, thank you for being brave enough to come on. I know this is not an easy conversation to have. And at some point, you'll probably get tired of talking about this. But can you share, if whatever you feel like sharing, about what has happened to you and where you are in your life?
Okay, so very early on, I wanted to kind of touch back onto some of the things that the other ladies were talking about. It's absolutely accurate that it's predatory upon people's vulnerabilities and age and socioeconomic background and so on and so forth. So early on, you know, I was vulnerable in a lot of those areas, and I didn't realize until adulthood that grown men were on me as a young person. And it's first time it happened, I was 16. And then later on in life at 19. And I was caught up for a long time. I didn't get out until about 29 years old.
So when you say caught up, what do you mean? And when you say on you, what do you mean? That they were pursuing you, grooming you, well, putting you in sexual compromising positions? Like what? Talk a little bit more in depth about that if you feel comfortable.
I don't mind. At first it starts out, they're pursuant, you know, they see somebody that fits what they need or want that they can exploit, you know, and now they have to draw you in. And a lot of times they use like the romantic, that in my case, I should say, type of pursuing, you know, efforts. And they take their time, however long it needs. I've had people, you know, take a very long time. And then, you know, once they have you in their hooks, then they'll introduce, oh, I need you to do this for me, or so on and so forth. And because you care and you feel like you trust this person and you're so young, for many reasons, I'm sure, you know, you do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you said 16, 15, 16.
The first time I was 16, headed towards 17. Yes.
Okay. And how did you get free? What was the catalyst to your freedom?
At the end, you know, when I left at 29.
Yes.
What happened? Oh, I mean, I think maturity happens to you, and mm-hmm. you see you're told the same lies over and like nothing changed. You know, and I think in any relationship, there's no growth and things become obvious. You're like, this is just ignorance, you know, and it's, you know, I was told, oh, we're going to be a team and, you know, you and all these other young ladies will work together. We'll put our money together and all of this stuff. And that's just not what was happening. You know, no one was being more used than I was. Not to say I you know, what, I should take it back, because people probably get used individually to what works to, you know, feed the main person's need, you know, but eventually your eyes open. Hopefully you probably knew early on, but you were in denial.
Mm-hmm. And so what did your family say? Were they aware? And was there anything that they could have said to intervene, to stop this earlier? Talk a little bit about that.
In my specific situation, I didn't have family support. You know, I'm a product of foster care and residential placements, and I've been all over the state of Connecticut and probably your home and everybody else's home. So by the time you get to your teenage years, less and less people are active in your life, you know, whether they're family members or just any outside agency. And you're just out there, at least back then, you know, you were just out there for the streets, you know? And, so back then, you know, no one asked questions. No one cared. I was a runaway for a while. Some people might talk to me and say, you know, you need to go home. But they didn't even know what was going on at home, really. Home was terrible.
So Tamara, you know, listening to her tell her story, I hear the vulnerabilities. I see all the vulnerability points where mm-hmm. makes this an ideal situation for somebody to take advantage of a young woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So talk a little bit about that, because it sounds like there was no intervention or adult supervision attuned enough to sort of pay attention to what was happening to her. I mean, do you feel like that's true, ER? Do you feel like there was no adult oversight?
I mean, especially from my own mother, either she figured it out too late, or, you know, I can't speak for her, you know what I mean? But it just, you know, I didn't feel close to anybody enough to say, oh, this older person is saying this, that, and a third thing to me. This is how I feel. This is what they're asking me to do. I kept it to myself for so long. And then later on in life, at the 19 years old, I was isolated. I wasn't allowed to speak to anybody. We were not allowed to have friends.
So in hindsight, well, not in hindsight, moving forward, what could you say, or what would you say to someone who could be listening now, who heard some of what you said and are feeling some of those same kinds of thought process, but don't know how to remove themselves or ask for help? What would you advise them to do?
There has to be one person in your whole life, I pray, that you trust enough to say something to. You don't have to say everything to them, but you can ask maybe a simple question, you know, and it might turn into a couple more questions, or they may not press. But you have to start somewhere with someone. And maybe this person can sit down with you and find the resources, because they're out there. These people are here. That's why you guys are on the radio and stuff like that. And to seek help sooner than later, you know, because you help yourself, because these people don't have your best interest at heart, and it really holds up your life. And yeah, ask anybody that you trust.
So tell me what your life is like today.
Today, I just had my first daughter.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm excited to be a mom to a girl. I have a son as well. And I want him to be a great guy. And I'm still with my daughter's father, and he is assisting me. I go to college. Today was my first day of classes. Again, this is my second time back in college, and I had a 3.9 GPA, and I feel confident that I can finish this time, and I'm going to succeed. And I have a better support system there. So I'm in a great place in life.
Thank you so much. I want to invite the sisters of the Waterbury Chapter of Links to come back anytime and to bring this conversation back. And I don't want this to be only in January. I want you to regroup and come back again, and let's talk about this on a regular basis, so that I can do my part to help raise awareness. Because I think Miss ER, I commend you for coming on and to share a piece of your story. Tamara Clark, I so appreciate you coming with the information on what people can do and what to look for. I think this is a conversation that warrants more than 45 minutes. And so I hope that you all consider coming back again and again and again until we are all eradicating human trafficking.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you to the Sisters of the Waterbury Chapter of the Links Incorporated. Thank you, Tamara Clark from Love 146. I'm a huge fan of the work that they do. And I commend the Links for picking up this mantle, because this is no easy conversation to have. It is not sexy. It is not fun. It is not entertaining. It is hard. It is arduous. And it is spirit breaking, but it is necessary. And I so appreciate you bringing it to my attention. I'm grateful. As a survivor of human trafficking, this warms my heart to have this larger conversation. So thank y'all.
Call us anytime. We're here.
All right. Thank y'all. Thank y'all, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank y'all. Thank you. Harry, thank you so much. And I will see y'all out here in these social justice streets.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Thank y'all. Tomorrow, my guest will be, I'm doing a lot of talking. Tomorrow I'm talking with the folks from Make Haven. J.R. Logan and Jay Johnson from Make Haven. If y'all don't know Make Haven, tune in tomorrow. I think you'll appreciate what they do over there. You may even want to join them. I'll see y'all tomorrow. Be safe out there in COVID. Thank you, Harry. Oh.